Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, everybody. How are you today? What's up? This is Nicole, and welcome to my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. So glad to be here with you today. Today, I'm going to bring you a really awesome conversation. Dr. Hillary McBride is someone who I just recently met, but I have been acquainted with her work for a minute. She is a friend and a colleague of Ruthie Lindsay. Many of you who follow my work follow Ruthie's work and her journey out of chronic pain and her journey through doing my work, which really was a huge part of her journey out of chronic pain. And so Ruthie comes and teaches with me at my Omega retreats in the summer. And this past year, she brought along Audrey Assad, who those of you who were at the retreat know how mind-blowing that whole experience was. I do not have words for both Audrey's singing and her music and her talent, her story of recovery and thriving and coming out of a very traumatic upbringing, and also the nonlinear movement and the embodiment work and the dancing that they brought to the retreat. So it was around that time that I became more deeply acquainted with Dr. McBride's work, and I really have a deep respect for the concept of embodiment in this work, the concept of coming home to ourselves. And although I have never done it yet before, I decided to have her on the podcast. And when I say I've never done it yet before, I mean, usually, as you know, if you're a fan of the pod, I either interview people who are success stories of my work. I do real-time heals where I sit with another person and do a therapy session together on the podcast for them to benefit, but also for everyone out there to benefit. Or I occasionally interview colleagues of mine that are in this very specific section of mind-body medicine. But I've never yet had someone on who speaks to what I'm speaking to, but doesn't necessarily work within the exact same realm of mind-body medicine as I do. And actually, I guess that was what I was thinking when I first invited Hillary on. But then I read her book. And when I read her book, I was like, hold on a second. We are actually saying the same thing. We're saying it from slightly different angles and from slightly different experiences. But the wisdom within, the connection between the mind and the body, the brain science behind why we carry our trauma physically, it's really, really all the same. And I just really, really enjoyed her take on it. And I think that as we walk these journeys of being alive and of our recovery from the things that have affected us, it's really helpful to have many voices that speak to us in many different ways, because you never know what's really going to land. And we all have those aha moments where something really lands and you feel the changes integrate into your body, into your heart, into your experience. And those are powerful moments. So one of such moments for me was at my Omega retreat last summer when Ruthie and Audrey did the nonlinear movement, which essentially was inviting us to move our bodies to the music in a way that was totally non-self-conscious. It was like journal speak for dance. And at first, as I talked to Hillary about on the podcast, I wasn't going to participate. You know, I was like the leader of the retreat, and I was just going to kind of stand back and observe my guest instructors carrying their message and, you know, doing their exercise with the group. And I was really called to participate, and it changed my life. I don't use that term loosely. It really did. I understood in a deeper way, in a very felt experience, sense experience, that embodiment was a bit missing from what I teach. I teach people to get out of pain. And we all know if you're in pain, getting out of pain is the number one-y. You got to do it. You got to do it and figure it out. And that's my jam. That's what I'm here to help you do. But there's something deeper. There's something deeper to be had in this human experience. And to me, the word embodiment really captures that meaning. So when I read Hillary's book, it's called The Wisdom of Your Body, I was really enthusiastic about having her on the podcast so we can start talking about these things. You know, during the interview, we started talking about the concept of healing and recovery. And I said, you know, my work might be the appetizer and the entree, but embodiment is the dessert. It's the flourishing, not just walking the path. And so we talk a lot about that, but she's just a wonderful energy, a lovely human being. I'm so glad to be getting to know her. And I really do hope that she and I can offer some workshops together in the future, because our work is just beautiful hand in glove kind of experience. So in just a moment, we're going to get to that. I also want you guys to know that I'm in the middle of writing my curriculum for not only the Omega Retreat, which is my week-long retreat that I do every summer, which will go on sale soon, but my weekend retreat at the Art of Living Retreat Center down in Boone, North Carolina. And I will be including this nonlinear movement that Hillary and I are going to talk about on the podcast that I did with Audrey and Ruthie over the summer. That's going to be part of our weekend. And so if indeed you can find your way to joining us in North Carolina, April 8th through the 10th, you can find that information on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Click on the retreats tab. Okay. So I really am excited to share this interview. So I'm not going to go on and on. If you are curious about my work, if you have questions, just realize that at my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, I have a resources tab that has so many of your questions answered. There's how to journal speak, there's frequently asked questions, there's all the resources, all the places where you can find my work, my YouTube channel, my book, my Instagram at Nicole Sachs, LCSW, follow me there for all my daily stuff. So just know that you can go over there and really understand what we're talking about here, because, you know, the life you save is your own, as I always say, until I'm blue in the face, until you want to smack me. But then, like, you do the work and you heal and you're like, dude, Nicole, that was the real thing. All right. So I hope that you're having a wonderful day. And if it's not a wonderful day, I hope the next hour of your life on this podcast brings you some joy. And without further ado, I give you my conversation with Dr. Hillary McBride. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the pod. Today, I have Dr. Hillary McBride, and I am so excited to have her on because I recently had the pleasure and privilege of reading her incredible book, The Wisdom of Your Body, and being just stricken with how similar our theories are, and just so excited to get into this. So welcome, Hillary.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be with you.
It's so great. It's so great. Now, a little backstory for me. I became really close with Ruthie Lindsay about 3 or 4 years ago when we met over her chronic pain journey and over some mutual friends and over her hearing an appearance I made on a podcast. And through knowing her, I've met the most incredible people, among them Audrey Assad, who taught with us at Omega last summer. And now I've met Dr. Hillary McBride. And I'm just so excited to continue to expand my circle of people that are speaking my language and helping people to understand in just very human, very digestible ways the relationship between the mind and the body and the way we have such an incredible power to heal ourselves. So Hillary, first, before I even start with all my questions, I just kind of wanted to invite you to introduce yourself and maybe tell my audience a little bit about you and kind of the space of the mind-body work that you come from.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. I'd be delighted to share with you. I come to this work of understanding the mind-body relationship because I had a reckoning really in the process of doing eating disorder recovery treatment of realizing that I didn't just need to change my thoughts about my body in order to heal. I needed to have a new experience of my body. And I had a therapist who guided me into being a body, essentially, instead of just a mind that's carried around by a body. And it wasn't actually until later in graduate school when I was still trying to intellectualize my way into embodiment. I was, you know, I published a textbook in 2018 about embodiment, and I was still really just thinking about what it means to be a body instead of experiencing it. And diving into experiential work in the body through movement and creativity and emotion and all sorts of different things has really transformed my relationship with myself, my ability to be present, my ability to work congruently with the clients that I work with, and has deeply changed the way that I do my clinical work. So there is a healing element for me, but as I realized I was becoming more connected to myself, I started to understand some of the things that great thinkers and writers about embodiment have been talking about for a long time, which is that when we are connected to ourselves, when we are experiencing ourselves more fully, we can experience other people more fully too. We have a different understanding, a more nuanced kind of felt and lived reality of our interconnectedness as people. So coming into our bodies also does something for how we attune to and relate to other people in their bodies. And it has, I mean, like I said, in my clinical work and my research as an academic, shaped so many of the questions that I ask. And I think also provides so many answers for things that have stumped us in the profession of psychology. Why is chronic pain untreatable? I mean, this is such a big part of your work, Nicole. Like, why do we have people who have these chronic conditions when there aren't any kind of organic causes for their injuries? Or what's happening that people are coming in to see their cardiologist with chest pains, but when they get a scan, their heart looks fine. What's going on there? So as much as our society has thought of the body as a problem for a long time, what I'm suggesting is all the ways that we as a society think our body is the problem are actually the ways that our body is calling us home to ourselves. And it is the answer to so many of our unsolvable questions, so many of our experiences of loneliness, isolation, disconnection, and whatnot. So that's a little brief overview of myself and my work, and happy to go wherever you're ready to go next in our conversation.
Well, I love that. And, you know, what's interesting, what struck me as I started to learn about you and your work, and this preceded even me reading the book. This was after our first conversation when I knew the book was on its way to me. I started realizing that I have been so passionately caught up in both my own journey and helping other people use their mind to heal their body, that I've almost lost track of the fact that we live in a body. And I know that sounds sort of silly, maybe on its face, but, you know, give us a second to explain that that's like really a problem, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
that's like something like, so I guess the way I'll explain it, where it first sort of started an awakening for me, is because I was given a structural diagnosis. So my story began at 19 when I was told, as a result of something called degenerative spondylolisthesis, which is a finding that is still a finding on an MRI that you could take of my back, that I have this structural abnormality. The doctors assumed it was, of course, the reason for my pain. And that started my whole pain journey. And as I learned about mind-body medicine and I realized that that's just a normal abnormality, my body remains completely healthy and strong, and I have never had a surgery nor an injection nor anything, and I'm pain-free as a result of mind-body medicine, I almost discounted the fact that it's also important to learn once we're pain-free. So pain-free is a goal. I mean, anyone living in chronic pain knows. And when I say pain-free, I will always clarify that that does not mean human pain-free. We all have pain. It is literally part of being alive. It is literally a gift from our brain and our nervous system and our body to help us know when we need to take care of ourselves. But when I became chronic pain-free, because chronic pain is, of course, an epidemic of fear and meaning and a lot of different brain science that causes the chronic pain to continue, I forgot to take that next step, that incredible step, to come back fully and wholly into my body. I figured that just being out of pain was enough. And it's not, you know, it's funny, it wasn't a conscious thing. I think it only became a conscious thing over the summer when Audrey and Ruthie came and did the nonlinear movement at my retreat. And so I did discuss this. If anybody heard the Instagram live I did recently with Ruthie Lindsay, we have discussed this before, but I don't think I've ever discussed it here, that what Ruthie and Audrey did, and I know you talk about it in your book, Hillary, is they came in with their stories, with their personal stories of recovery of the heart, of the body, of the mind. But they also came in with this concept of nonlinear movement, where they put on beautiful sort of music that invited us into our own experience. It was, each song was very different than the next. And they just invited us to move, mm-hmm. however, to not move like you're worried about what you're going to look like, and to not move the way you think the music is supposed to make you move. I mean, some people were in the fetal position on the ground, just writhing around. This was not dancing. This, right. I mean, it looked like dancing for some people, but it was embodiment. And oh my freaking God, it blew my mind in a way that at this point in my career, it's really exciting to get my mind blown.
Yes, that's right.
You know what I'm saying, right?
You got a taste of something novel, like another element of your work or another dimension of this healing.
It was incredible. And let me just say quickly, personally, that because I was like the main instructor at the event and they were coming in to bring this amazing content, I actually intended to stand on the wall and watch to see how my participants were doing. I didn't feel like it was really necessary. It was very strange what was going on for me. Because, you know, I wonder if you agree with this. Every time we teach, it's also a time to heal and to learn.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I did not know I needed this teaching. And so maybe we were in like the second song and the third song, and I'm finding my body kind of swaying against the wall, and I'm watching it, and I just said to myself, no, I need to be right in the middle of this. And I walked into the middle of the circle where Ruthie was, you know, absolutely unabashedly going octopus all over the place. And I joined her right in the, it was such a spiritual experience for me. I was sobbing by the end. It was beautiful. And for me to be able to be so free while I was teaching also was such a gift. So anyway,
all of you was there.
I was right there, and it brought me, kind of delivered me right into the arms of finding out about your work, because your work is such a missing piece in stuff I've been teaching for 20 years. And so talk to me a little bit about your reflections on like what I said, or nonlinear movement or embodiment or whatever brings up for you.
Oh, I'm noticing, feeling so excited inside of me thinking about what happened for you, because it really reminds me of an experience I had of being in movement. And it was like opening a trap door into all of this treasure of connection to myself and vitality and aliveness that I think had been disconnected from my understanding of myself and then my understanding of this content, right? Like, we can talk about the body, but it's a totally different thing to experience the body. We can talk about expression or freedom or ease in the body, but it is a totally different thing to move out of the intellectual assessment, the analysis, into feeling freedom that goes all the way from our head to our toes. So this, the kind of, I think what they're talking about is nonlinear movement, I came to know as authentic movement or ecstatic dance, and got acquainted with the work of Gabrielle Roth, who as a teacher at Esalen forever ago looked at people's patterns of movement and saw that there's some strategies that people use to move through life. There's, you know, maybe five different rhythms or so, including stillness as a way that our body moves, and supported people to create these wave forms of movement that go through each of the different rhythms, allowing their body to practice, to rehearse, to connect with the corners of movement that sometimes we don't access because we're restricted to this narrative, the sensory narrative of how our body is supposed to move through space and time. And I remember learning about this because I had a clinical supervisor at the time who told me that she was walking by a studio, a yoga studio or something like that, and saw these people writhing around. Yeah. Really like described, like, are they dripping acid? Are they having a second break? Like, is this some sort of, like, what's going on here? And she, of course, like as a creative inspired person, was like, I'm going to find out. So went and found out and then said, hey, I think this would be really important for your work. And I remember going to an authentic movement class for the first time. It was a five rhythms class. And I use the word class loosely because the idea is that it's not taught. It's like, it's an invitation to come back to how your body wants to move. But as I was in that class, I lay on the ground weeping for the entire 3 hours that first time, because I realize, and this is something I put together later, when we have trauma associated with a place, it would make sense that going back to that place would be scary and would bring up all sorts of feelings. Our brain is wired to associate the intensity of a place with the emotion that goes along with helping us survive it, or lets us know this was awful, this was really hard. But what happens when our body is the place, right? Then when we go back into our bodies, often we encounter the reason we left in the first place, which is that things felt overwhelming. It felt scary. We felt alone. We felt emotions that were otherwise unsupported, very intense, maybe unprocessed, and were there lingering, waiting for our attention when we came home to them. So I remember kind of putting it together after the fact that I tell my patients this all the time, you know, if you had a trauma on a certain street corner, when you go back there, it's going to be really scary. But when the trauma happens in your body and you go back there, it would make sense. It would be really scary. And so that first time of being in movement was not a joy-filled experience for me. It was a remembering. It was a kind of grieving of sorts. But it was in staying with that process, going back the next week and the week after that and the week after that, that I started to realize that my inability to be in my body was restricting the experience I had, both of freedom from pain and freedom from, like you said, chronic pain, but also human pain, and or the ability to work through or navigate or discharge things that were stuck in me, but also this other side of it, which is not just healing, but a kind of flourishing. Like so much of the work when we think about mind-body medicine has us oriented around solving pathology. It's about us kind of repairing wounds. But the thing is that our body is not just a series of organs and, you know, a skin bag that carries our mind around that is holding just our trauma. Our body is also the place where our creativity, our sensuality, our vitality, our freedom is. And it often isn't part of the conversation that we're having. When we talk about mind-body medicine, a lot of it is let's repair the damage.
Right.
But we don't go very much further than that. And our body is waiting for us to say, but when will you also let this experience of being a body be full of vitality and joy? Like there is more than just pain here. There is creative expression. There is aliveness. There is interconnectedness. There is a deep spirituality here in our bones waiting to be felt and known by us.
So I love, love, love all of this. And I think I found the title to this episode, which is, it's not just about healing, it's about flourishing.
Oh, yes.
I love that.
Oh, me too. Me too.
We forget that we are here to flourish.
Right. Right. And I mean, I come from the discipline in psychology, like you know this, our training and orientation is see the person for the patterns of brokenness, help their symptoms be reduced, and that's it. Their symptoms are reduced and we send them out the door. Right, exactly.
You're fine. Done.
You're fine now. Oh, you don't want to end your life? Great. Or you're not having the same patterns of conflict with your partner? Great. Okay, you are like accepting of your reality? Great. But we don't know in our field how to take the conversation further and be with people in their experiences of, like we said, flourishing. How do we get people past just neutral or functional into thriving? And the body, I think, is a big part of how we do that.
1,000,000%. And I think this is where I'm having a bit of an awakening right now from reading your book and from spending time with Ruthie and Audrey over the summer, that for myself and for the people that I help, I would like to offer that as dessert.
You know, that's right.
Know you can't have it for dinner, because for dinner we got to get rid of your chronic pain and we got to manage like your heart and your soul and how hard this has been, and that's nurture right. your inner child. Like there's so much work to be done, but you know, it's not just eat dinner and, you know, eat the bland potatoes you know, boiled meat and go to bed. Like right. this is about like the whole buffet, and right. and it's so exciting to me. So Hillary, let me ask you, I've written notes because telling you, okay, first of all, guys, I just need everyone to know that in the history of this podcast, which has been I think 3 years. I have never interviewed somebody who is not just a person who has done my work or a person that is 100,000,000% just a colleague in my field. Hillary's work is something that was introduced to me, but when I became acquainted with it, it got so exciting for me that I said, you know, I'm stepping out of my comfort zone and inviting her on because I want to expose my audience to more of this dessert. Because first of all, I do want to say her book, The Wisdom of Your Body, is also about appetizer and dinner. You know, the hard stuff is covered. This is not just about flourishing. This is about, like, it goes hand in hand with my work. And it's also about thriving and flourishing and real embodiment. So I want to ask you, so I wrote down some things as I was reading, and one sentence that I really loved that I'd love for you to expand on is, learning embodiment requires curiosity, attention, sensation, and acceptance. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was just a really loaded sentence that I'd love to unpack.
Yes, yes. So when we think about embodiment, I think a lot of us, again, want to intellectualize that. We want to think about our bodies differently because we still experience ourselves primarily as a thinking being instead of a being, instead of a sensing and experiencing a present awareness. So when we are up in our heads and we're used to that being the way that we orient ourselves to the world, we forget about allowing ourselves to shift the location of identity back into our senses. But when we drop into our senses, sometimes we notice things that are uncomfortable. We notice things that, some unfinished business that we have. So when we attend to our sensation, we need to do that in a way that is kind, that is loving, that is curious, that takes us on an investigative journey instead of noticing something that feels uncomfortable, hitting the brakes, slamming the brakes, ejecting out, dissociating up into our mind, maybe deciding, well, we need to tell a different story, but still living in a kind of cognitive space. So dropping into the body has to be done with a particular kind of orientation. It has to be with the idea that this is going to be a bit of an adventure. Right. And that when we find something, that instead of immediately deciding what it means to us or someone else, we need to investigate. So what that might mean is noticing if we have a sensation in our body and saying to that sensation, that knot in your stomach, that feeling of the kind of the gnawingness in your chest, maybe it's an ache somewhere in your body, saying, wow, we don't talk very often, gnawing sensation, or right. Hey, we don't talk very often, not, but instead of deciding that you're bad, I want to know, is there something you want to tell me? Is there something that you're trying to let me know that I need to give my attention to? And seeing sensation and our body and everything that's happening inside of us as allies to our thriving, as allies to our healing, both sides of, right? The recovery from pathology, but also the flourishing. And then I think what we're doing with this kind of curious attention is we're creating wider spaces within us that allow us to tolerate what's going on. And so when we start to notice sensation in the future, instead of, again, like I said, feeling it and ejecting out, we become familiarized with ourselves. And in doing so, and this is the great Brené Brown has said this, like, we can't numb selectively. We can't numb the rough stuff without also numbing the joyful stuff. When we create these wider containers to hold experience inside of ourselves, then we have more room to notice what feels good. We have more room to notice, like, oh, I feel a little turned on right now. Wow, I haven't felt that in a while. Or whoa, I feel a creative idea. I feel the spark inside of me. Or I feel really peaceful. But it's often in learning to be curious and stay with some of the uncomfortable stuff that allows us to expand our capacity to hold and allows us to move through to the other side, the joyful, the vitality, the vibrancy, the connection, the arousal, the whatever it is that we're ultimately hoping to get to.
The flourishing part.
There you go. That's it.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. And when you say that about, you know, maybe if that knot in our stomach or that gnawing in our chest or whatever, maybe it's got something to tell us. I mean, this is where right before we jumped on the air, I said to Hillary, you know, it's like stunning how our work is the same. That is exactly what I'm doing over here. And I know that you're acquainted with Ruthie's journey and the journal speak process, but essentially what journal speak is taking a big fat pause, because whenever we are suffering in any sort of chronic pain or symptom, syndrome, condition, a disruption of our comfort, the first thing we do is seize up. Because it's scary and because we don't want to feel that way. And so rarely do people, are people educated on the fact that it's about taking a pause and looking toward the body and toward the pain and saying, what is happening here? What information am I missing? And you know, what's really interesting about me personally, and I say this to my audience all the time, is although I became chronic pain free many years ago, I still experience what I call symptom imperatives all the time. So, you know, I'll have a lot going on in my personal life, or I'll be under a lot of stress, and something in my body will take the extra that my heart can't feel. So we'll take the overflow. And so maybe I'll get a headache, or maybe I'll get, you know, shoulder pain or hip pain or whatever it is, my symptom imperative of the moment. Oftentimes, you know, funny, not funny, I'll get something that I'm talking to somebody else about, you know? So if somebody else has, you know, a problem, I'll be like, oh, I see. I'm going to share that with you now, because the mind is so suggestible, and I'm totally comfortable with that. And that's why I say that chronic pain is an epidemic of fear, because it does not cause me to become afraid when I feel sensations in my body anymore. And I have absolute empathy and connection for those of you who it does, because it used to get me all the time. It was a constant dance between myself and my fear. But it's interesting, because one of the things that I got as a symptom imperative, it was probably about a year or two ago, was I got this consistent hip pain and I couldn't get it to go away. And I knew exactly what it was, meaning, like I said, sometimes we feel things in our hearts and sometimes we feel things in our bodies, and they're literally interchangeable. And I had a lot going on, and it was a space of self-consciousness, maybe low self-esteem, and I knew it was hanging out in my hip. So what's interesting is one day I was on a walk and my hip was acting up, and I did what I thought I was supposed to do, which is I kind of looked down at it proverbially and I said, okay, fine. What do you have to say? And the response I got was so awesome, because it was so unexpected.
Oh, I love what, when that happens.
Right? And my hip turned back to me and said, the fuck you do. The fuck you do want to hear what we have to say. You don't want to hear what I have to say. You want me to go away, just like you always have. And wow.
You got spanked.
I did. My body smacked back. And you know what? It was a beautiful moment, because I just stopped in my tracks and I said, you are absolutely right.
Wow.
And we're going to need to pause and really take more time with this.
Oh, you know what I love about that is that there's so many different layers of healing that are happening in that conversation. I mean, the turning towards is important, but then the insight that you got of how hard it was to turn towards, like your body really said, no, you don't actually want to. And that's part of the problem. And I think that that's such a bit, like for me, that has been such a big part of my healing journey, is realizing that all of these things that you're calling symptom imperatives were proof that I use, that so many people use to say, look, my body is bad. It is dysfunctional. We see them as markers of pathology instead of looking at them and saying, oh, that is my body calling me home into even more wholeness. So we see these as a problem, but when we move towards them, always, always, they say, here is another thing for you to look at, so that you don't have to have so much disconnection with yourself and the world around you. So you don't have to be fragmented or pulled apart. Like, come home, sweetheart. Come home. I'm here. But sometimes it is like well, the fuck you do. Like, that is the thing that happens first, because our body is like, I actually care more about you and your thriving and your flourishing than I do about the delusion that you have about me being bad. And I'm going to disrupt that. I'm going to intentionally disrupt that. And instead of seeing that as a problem, what I'd love for us all to do is see that as our body's goodness, that is our body
Absolutely.
Being wise.
And more, and yes, and yes, that's our body's goodness. And what's the fantastic result of such conversation is I had the bravery to turn toward it.
Yes.
My body had the wisdom to turn back to me and tell me the truth.
Yeah.
I had the tenacity and the bravery to listen to that truth and to do the deeper work around the stuff that I knew I had inklings of what was in there. Mm-hmm. And now not only am I absolutely free of hip pain and can run 10 miles, but I have healed the parts of me that were the origin of that story in the first place, which is the much more satisfying work, to be honest. Yes. I mean, our physical pain is an invitation into what truths that need our acknowledgement. But once we get the opportunity to go there and we understand this inextricable connection between the mind, the body, and the experience of being human and alive, the gratifying end is just so beautiful and so huge. And so deep. And so anyway, when you said that, that just reminded me. Oh. I haven't thought about that story in a while.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad that you did that, that you remembered it and told us about it, because it's connecting me to all of these places in my life where I realized too that when I've had conversations with my body, it has been reluctantly. Like I'm inching towards connection, but I think my body is calling bullshit on me and saying like, well, you're doing this because you're like performing a script that you've been told to perform. Like, oh, just listen to your body. It's fine. Like, we can do that too. We can perform embodiment, or we can perform compassion in a way that isn't authentically, you know, being expressed. And I think my body will often say, no, like, really be here with me, really settle into this conversation, really listen. Don't just pay lip service to this and be like, oh, I did, you know, I did the journaling, or I felt the feelings. Like, no, really, like, let's be in a love affair with each other. And that's going to demand all of your attention and all of your curiosity in such a way that, like, I'm going to help you be more authentic. And I really feel like when I give my body a voice, like you did there, when there was this thing that spoke up and said, here's what's going on, the voice that comes from my body, not just the scripts about myself that I've learned to memorize, but really the thing that comes right from the place in my belly is always funnier, kinder, more loving, wiser than any version of myself that I've learned to be. It's always that way.
And you know, I want everybody out there listening to know that if you don't feel authentic in a conversation with your body, don't stop talking.
That's right.
Don't stop talking, because this kind of insight that I had on that walk is rare. I've had many conversations where it's just been a whole lot of bullshit, but it doesn't matter. Right. Just like any relationship, sometimes you have to do the surface stuff first. Right. You know, you just chat and you get to know one another and you get more comfortable, and then there'll be moments of truth that you will be surprised but also very grateful for.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me of something I talk about in the book about like thinking about analogies of marriage and partnership, and how when we have a conflict with somebody, it would make sense if there was tension and division and fragmentation and distance, that if we decide to say, okay, well, tell me what's really going on, do we think that they're honestly going to tell us what's with vulnerability and kindness, everything that we want to hear? Like, probably not. There's going to have to be some repair that happens where we say, wow, I'm so sorry I haven't been listening, but I'm going to show up, and I'm going to show up again. And exactly like you're saying, Nicole, I am not going to give up on you, because this, we're doing this together. And I'm going to keep being tenacious in my gentleness and my kindness and my curiosity and my attention, because down the road, when I show up enough times, trust will be rebuilt. And it will be then that we can start having conversations that do have that kind of authenticity. But just like any other relationship, if there was distance, or if we had come up with a story that someone is our enemy, and then we went up to them in a coffee shop and we said, tell me the truth, like, why would they trust us enough to be vulnerable with us? This is the same with our bodies. Like, our culture has made our bodies the enemy. And this is about healing our relationship, stitching it back together over time, exactly like you said, the slow, steady, persistent, I'm listening, keep telling me, keep telling me, keep telling me, that allow us to get the truth out. But that doesn't necessarily always happen in a moment.
Absolutely. And if those of you who are familiar with the inner child work that I teach, it's a very similar structure, which is, you know, people want to do inner child work and they want to go up to different aspects of themselves and say, okay, I'm listening, tell me. And I say, good intentions, like, awesome. And you have to be patient. Your inner child is like an abused animal that you've just rescued from the shelter. They might want to be under the bed for weeks, you know, and that's why it is your job to kindly, calmly, and securely just show up hand to heart, show up day in, day out, and say, I'm just here. I'm just here. Oh. I'm ready to come back. It's okay, or it's not okay. However it goes, I'm ready to come back. And like, I have been doing this personally a bit. Your book is really helping me. I'm going to put a lot of these suggestions into practice for myself because, you know, I'm a work in progress too. And, you know, I can teach this stuff from morning till night. And if I'm not doing certain things for myself, it's not helping me. I could be helping other people. And this is where I am. I am right here in embodiment. So I want to ask you another question that really struck me while I was reading. So you do a beautiful job, Hillary, of describing the brain science. You and I are both brain science peeps. You know, I know this now that I've read your work, that we're both seeking to help people come home to themselves by understanding what the heck is actually going on.
Right.
I think there's so much shame that people carry about being ill or being other than or being, you know, having mental health issues or having low self-esteem that they don't realize there are actually scientific brain-based reasons behind the way that we respond to life. They have to do with trauma responses, you know, and you and I literally, we talk about so much the same stuff, big T, little T, trauma, so much stuff that is the same. And so I took this note because when you talk about shutting down, that is a process that is not a choice, that is indeed the nervous system response that we have no control over. And this was a conversation she was having regarding the fight and the flight response as well. But this shutdown, this freeze response is something that I think I would love us to have a little bit more conversation about, because when I was listening to you and you were talking about this this shutdown that was not a choice, it made me think of how I explain to people how to understand their back pain or their fibromyalgia or their migraines or their chronic fatigue or their irritable bowel, all the reasons that people are drawn to my work. And what I like to tell them is your nervous system finds a safer resting space in your pain than it does in feeling your feelings. Your nervous system right now, you know, just today, feels that your repressed emotions are a greater predator to your life than your physical pain, which quite frankly keeps you small and quiet and asking for help and able to take care of yourself. And it feels so akin to this uncontrollable shutdown, because of course nobody would say, I choose to have migraines, just like nobody would say, I choose for my whole body to shut down. But it is considered by the brain and the nervous system a safer space, a literally a trauma-informed space. So I just wondered if you could talk about that a bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm so glad that you started with this preface of shame, because I think the not knowing that there are scientific reasons for this is the reason why so many people then continue to stay in the shutdown. So we shut down, but then we don't know how to interpret that as actually a survival response that our body is using to stay alive, to stay in connection, to stay good, or whatever that means. And so we then further shame ourselves, or we are shamed by others, shamed by a culture that doesn't understand, doesn't have a healthy working model for what normal development of the human organism is. So the way that I like to think about this is in terms of the staircase of response. That's something that I talk about in the book, but it may be a more, the academic term would be the phylogenic hierarchy of stress response. This is implicated or really worked out in the work of Dr. Stephen Porges. The idea that we used to have is that our brain-body system is kind of like a light switch where we flip on into intensity or kind of activation, and then we flip off into rest, but it doesn't really account for a kind of tiered response, a staircase. So what we can walk all the way down or walk all the way back up, or kind of hang out on certain steps, kind of take a step down, hang out there. Maybe the conditions change. We take a step back up towards safety. The idea is that we start, our nervous system is primed to thrive in conditions of rest, where we can play, we can create, we can learn, we can laugh, we can be active, where we can engage, we can take information in, but we can also sleep and heal and digest. And when something happens, our nervous system, again, in all of its wisdom, is wired to help us reach out to other people and say, hey, can you help me? Or, hey, that doesn't feel good. Can you stop? There's an activation in a specific branch of nerves that goes right to our larynx that helps us speak up and tell other people, I'm not okay, or this is not okay. Mm-hmm. And if that is not listened to, this is the really important caveat. Our body wants to do that. When that isn't respected, when it actually puts us more in danger, this cascade of shutting down starts to happen, or anteing up.
This is so important. Are you guys hearing this? I feel like who does this? Brené Brown actually is the one who does this. She interrupts her guests and she goes, no, I'm sorry. You have to say that again. But I want people to understand, you innately as a human organism want to speak up and defend yourself.
Yes.
It is a complex form of, I guess it would be fight, right? I mean, if we had to simplify it.
It's, think about it more in between rest and fight, social engagement. It's actually where we're taught to go first, even before we need to fight, because it's our brain saying, well, maybe we can work this out. Or I believe you. You know, I think you're going to help me. I don't necessarily assume that someone's going to hurt me or that I need to defend myself against them. I want to see another human being as my ally. We need each other to survive. So it's almost more like, can we be friends? Can you help me? Than it is fight.
Right. I see. Because it's like an evolution. It's the more evolved way of looking at our mind-body system. And what I love what you're saying, because it speaks so deeply to people pleasing and goodism and so many of the personality structures that are so typical for people who have chronic pain, that there has been something in your life that has taught you it is not safe to speak.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Yet you learned somewhere along the way that when you speak up and when you say no, or when you say that doesn't feel good, or when you say, I need your help, that's another one, help me, right? That we have learned somewhere in our interpersonal system, our social system, that is going to cause more danger to us. We're going to be abandoned. We're going to be shamed. We're going to be left alone. We're going to be ignored. We're going to be perhaps even have violence inflicted upon us. And so we learn very quickly, because our nervous system is survival oriented, if that jeopardizes our safety even more, guess what? We're not going to do that again. So then we move to the next level of the staircase, which is, okay, I'm going to get agitated. Like, this is where we see the fight or flight, the activation. And that's our body giving us energy. Okay, get out of here, do something, make a change. Don't think critically. Don't assess if this is the right time to send that email or if this is the right time to have that conversation. It's like, get out of here, say the thing, do the thing, split. And our body, again, in its wisdom, is saying, if that's going to hurt you even more, just shut down. Mm-hmm. Just play dead, disengage, don't interact. And this is kind of, I don't know how much you talk about this in your work, Nicole, but this is one of our current understandings of where depression comes from, is that it's not just a person who's born with a chemical imbalance. It is a nervous system response to having been ignored and then very afraid for a very long time, to the point that our nervous system says it is more compassionate to disengage and shut down. Because you're going to get hurt if you engage in the world. And go ahead. Yeah.
No. You finish up, because then I'm going to make one more point on it. But I want to hear what you're saying.
The idea is that we head up the staircase of healing in the same way. So when we move from social engagement and activation then into kind of the fight or flight response and then into shutdown, often when people are coming out of shutdown and they're heading towards safety, they feel fight or flight again. It's like their body is warming up. We're thawing out from that shutdown state. And so often it feels more distressing when we're connecting, because we're connecting with all of this intensity that was there before the shutdown happened. So to our conversation earlier, when you go in and you connect to yourself and you listen, it would make sense that sometimes what you hear at first is screaming. It would make sense that would be what your body is saying, because it's like, well, I'm back online. I'm finally being heard. I'm going to tell you everything that made me shut down. And it is after that. It is when we keep going compassionately, persistently, lovingly, that we get to the social engagement or the rest and play state.
All right. Well, I just want to say that I could sit and talk to you forever. And I know that Hillary has a definite need to stop at a certain time because she is a new mommy and she has so precious little time. So I could just go on and on about that because I just think what you just said was so important. But anyone who is interested can certainly pick up a copy of The Wisdom of Your Body and learn so much more about that. But in closing, I just needed to say this for my community. Chapter 6 of your book is about understand. I don't actually remember the title of the chapter, but it's the chapter that spoke very deeply to me about my work and about how these two ways of thinking and understanding and being with the mind and the body are so important to understand. And I love the conversation when you said to yourself in this chapter, maybe the fact that I am thinking about the pain as a problem is perpetuating the pain. And since the pain and the tightening are only a result of the body's response to trauma, and this was following your two car accidents, it is indeed not a problem, but a loving gesture. And you said, and I heard that. And I just said, I think everyone doing my work needs to read chapter 6 with an open heart for their loving body and their loving nervous system, because, you know, you do a beautiful job, Hillary, of explaining that tightness that trauma causes our body to inhabit. And, you know, so much of my work is trauma informed, and it's about how people who've experienced big and little T trauma, somehow have that filter, that lens through which everything is filtered and makes the world a very dangerous place, which causes a lot of chronic pain because chronic pain is caused by a lot of tension and tension is caused by this process. And I just love that you reframed it that way, that, you know, if we can look at this tension, even the back pain, even the stomach, even the head, even the things that you think are ruining your life, if we can just reframe it as a loving gesture, as a nervous system desperate to hold us and to protect us, I do think that mindset shift is really key to healing.
Yeah, you said it. Yeah, it can be the thing that actually precipitates softening.
Yes.
Just simply that mindset shift. There's like doing nothing else, saying maybe, even the possibility that it's a loving gesture is enough at times for our nervous system to go, oh, maybe we're safe right now. Oh, there's an opening. And when we think about what's happening in the brain states associated with curiosity, creativity, patience, right? There is an entirely different operating system that's utilized than what happens when we're in pain. It's like there is a shift already up the staircase. We're kind of pulling our bodies up the staircase to safety by saying, well, maybe this is a loving gesture. Oof. All of a sudden there is room for more things to be going on than just, I'm unsafe. My body is attacking me. I can't do this. Simply the linguistic tool of that maybe is a good place to start for some.
A great, great place to start. All right. Well, like I said, we could go on and on, but I do hope that one day in the future we will be able to work together and bring our work together in a way that is meaningful to people, because I just love what you're doing.
Thank you, Dr.
Hillary McBride, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
It is such an honor to be with you. And wow, I am just feeling so joyful that you are in the world doing the work that you are doing. I'm grateful to be a part of this conversation with you. It's such an honor to me.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I've enjoyed it so much. And for all of you guys out there, I'm sure you got a lot from it. Hillary, tell us where they can find you if people are looking into your work a little more deeply.
Sure. On Instagram, Hillary Leanna McBride. On Twitter, Hillary L. McBride. My website, HillaryLMcBride.com. And there are books wherever books are sold. You can just ask them for The Wisdom of Your Body.
The Wisdom of Your Body. And even that sentence alone, you know, that phrase is just like, sit with that for a second, guys. You're living in a wise thing, you know? It's so complex and so beautiful and so wise, and I'm learning more about that every day. All right, well, thank you again for being here, and thank all of you guys. And if you are enjoying the podcast, I do ask that you go over to iTunes and rate and review it. It helps people find the podcast. It helps get the word out that I just feel like everybody needs. Mm-hmm. Until next time, this has been Nicole Sachs with the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast, and I will see you then. Bye-bye.